Hey folks, it's me, Ben Blacker, the creator and host of the Writers Panel. If you are looking for something fun to do on April 21st, wherever you are, please check out the new show that I'm producing called Retrospects. It's a live script read show. Back in the early days of television, the 1990s, writers hoping to break in would write episodes of existing shows. And these spec scripts were never meant to be produced, only to serve as samples for the aspiring writer. So what we're doing in Retrospects is taking those old specs and giving them live reads. On April 21st, we'll have our second show. We're featuring a West Wing episode written by Mark Guggenheim, the co-creator of Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. We're also doing a gender-swapped Big Bang Theory, written by Helen Chang, who is a writer on the Lord of the Rings TV show, as well as Hawaii Five-0, 13 Reasons Why. And we have an incredible cast. We've announced a bunch of them already, including a Superman, Brandon Routh, Katie Cassidy from Arrow, Olivia Scott Welch from Fear Street, Sherry Cola from Joyride, which is a great and hilarious movie, John Ross Bowie from The Big Bang Theory, and more. Ricardo Hurtado from School of Rock. Kieran Deal from Destroy All Neighbors, who's a great stand-up comic. My friend Rishi Hirway, who did the West Wing Weekly podcast. We got these terrific casts. More, even more are coming. That's on April 21st at 2 p.m., a reasonable hour for grown people. 2 to 4 p.m. You'll be home in time for dinner. You'll be in bed by 8:30. Attend live if you're in Los Angeles. Stream it wherever you are. We have tickets for both in-person and streaming, and they're cheap tickets because it's an afternoon show, and it's, you know, just a fun little show. Go to the Elysian Theater's website, elysiantheater.com. Check out their calendar and go to April 21st. Retrospects. I hope to see some of you folks there. These are really going to be fun shows. The scripts are great. The casts are amazing. The first one we did was such a good time. The second one will be even better because now I have less stage fright. Thanks, as always, for supporting the podcast, and please enjoy today's episode.
They write, they talk, and talk about what they write. Tune in tonight, or whenever the time is right. It's the Writers Panel with Ben Blacker, and it's starting now. Oh, yeah!
Michael, I'm going to have you introduce yourself on the microphone so the folks know what your voice sounds like and where. Let them know where they've seen your name on their television screen in the past.
Sure. My name is Michael Jamin. I'm a professional TV writer. I've been doing it for about 28 years. I've written on, some of the shows I've written on are King of the Hill, Beavis and Butthead, Just Shoot Me, Rules of Engagement, Out of Practice, Wilfred, Marin, Brickleberry, Tacoma FD. I got a list over there. I've written probably a couple dozen TV pilots, a couple dozen TV pilots, a couple of features. And I post daily on social media as Michael Jamin Writer.
And you've also got a new book out right now called A Paper Orchestra. What is this book and where did it come from? Why now?
So one of the things that I think people are surprised to learn, even though I have a long track record in TV, is that I don't necessarily write what I want to write. I write what people pay me to write. And that's a good trade and I'm happy with it. It's a good deal. But, and I get notes and people want me to do what they want to do, and that's fair. But after several years of just, I wanted to try something like, what would it be like for me to write something on my own without the notes, without interference? And if you want to do that, you're not going to, you don't get to sell it for a lot of money. You have to do it as a book. And so that was what my intention was. I've always been a fan of David Sedaris. I love his writing. I like the kind of stories he tells, which are called, the genre is called personal essays. So I decided I was going to write a book of those, and it took me about 5 years, but here it is.
Congrats. Making this decision that, like, I want to write something on my own. I want to write the kind of thing that I love. That feels like the first step, but then how do you start to circle, what stories are you even going to tell?
Yeah, well, they're all true stories. That was the intention, and they're told, but they're dramatized. And I just started with memory, like whatever memories I had, like I was like, could this memory turn into a story? And I have a terrible memory from my childhood and everything. Like I don't remember that much, but the few things that I do remember is probably because I had some kind of emotional attachment to that memory. And because there's an emotional attachment means it almost guarantees you can get a story out of it. So that's where I started from.
What was the first thing you did? Like, take us through the for both the writing process and the selling
Well,
process.
the writing process was basically, yeah, just start writing. I wasn't even worried about selling. Like, let's see if I can write these things. And at first, I was such a fan of David Sedaris, and I read all his books. I got them all right here, and I read them all like once just to enjoy it, and then three more times to study it. And I was like, okay, I guess that's how you do it. Like, do it like he does it. And then I wrote a couple of stories the way he does it, almost in his voice. And I go, this is pretty good. And then I read it like with fresh eyes a couple weeks later, and I was like, this is terrible. It just sounds like I was doing an imitation of him. And that's the weird thing about being a TV writer is that, as a TV writer, my job is not to have my own voice. My job is to capture the voice of the characters of the show or the voice of the show, but it's not my voice. And so then it was like, oh, well, what's my voice? What do I sound like? What do I want? How do I want to come across? And you get to choose.
Yeah, let me stop you right there because I'm really curious about this idea. Because presumably, when you started out in this business, 30 years ago, you had a voice. Like we all sort of have our emerging voice in our early 20s, whatever that is. But yeah, the job for all these shows is to write in the voice of the show. So, did you have some notion of like who you were as a writer, who you want to be as a writer? How did you start to put these things together to create your voice or find it?
I wasn't even as good as you're talking about in my 20s. Like I really was like in college, I wanted to be a writer, and I applied to the creative writing program, and I got rejected twice, and it was because I wasn't good. And so, it made sense, but I wanted to learn how to write. And then I came to LA and I studied screenwriting. And then most of what I learned as a writer, I learned on the job from other, really good writers. And then when I started writing this book, I was like, yeah, what's my voice? But when I finally finished it, or even as I started writing it, it really felt like, oh my God, I'm finally the writer that I wanted to be in college. Like I kind of forgot about that kid and became a TV writer. I kind of forgot about, him. And so that was so satisfying, the fact that like I did it, but in terms of my voice, like I didn't have a voice in my 20s either.
As you were writing and discovering what your voice can be, like what did you discover? What did you find that voice to be? Obviously, you're influenced by not just Sedaris, but 50 years of input. How did it come out the other side?
And that's the thing, because when I started writing my own voice, and I was like, I can't write like him, and then I had to write my own voice, and then I felt like, well, this isn't good. Like and now I'm an imposter. Like no one's doing what I'm doing, so therefore it must not be right, And that's really like that was a hard because like, I felt like, well, David Sedaris, there's obviously a market for what he does. People love what he don't do it the way he does it. And then it was just, I felt like, I was a fraud, and I just felt like it was a poor imitation. And then I was like, well, but it was almost tragic because it's like, but he does it right. So therefore I'm not doing it right if I don't do it like him, And then eventually I kind of just, what happened was I YouTubed a lot of videos listening to, because I wanted to make something artistic. I wanted to do art. I don't do make art as a TV writer. I don't even know what art is, but so I Googled a lot of videos or YouTubed, what's the word? And then I don't even know the right word, but I would study musicians about like what is art to them? What is the response? Like, how do you make art? And then when I watched enough and I got some really good advice from like great musicians, then it came clear to me what I had to do.
You've just introduced two very big ideas, and I want to go into both of them. But first, like, what was some of that advice? What did you glean from? And I think that's such a great idea, looking at like artists you love who are working in a different medium too. So what did you glean from some of these videos?
Well, and I didn't want to ask my writer friends because I didn't want to get their feedback. I didn't want to, I know what they're going to say because we do, we're all TV writers, and I didn't want to get the notes from them. And so I turned to musicians for some reason. I don't know why, but like there's a bunch of videos. One was David Bowie talking about art. It's a great video. You can look it up. And he basically says what the point of art is you're reaching from inside yourself, and hopefully you're taking something inside of yourself. Maybe it's painful, and you are expressing it in a way so that it helps you better understand yourself and the world around you. And then when you can do that, and this is what he says, like once you wade into waters that's a little too deep for you to stand in, then you might be doing something great, you know, because it should be uncomfortable to you. And then so I was like, okay, that was helpful. Then I watched another video by Pharrell, and he said, he was critiquing other artists. You know, he was like, I don't know what it was, like some kind of contest for musicians and songwriters, and you know, he was giving them notes. And this one woman, she had her song, and he said, "You did it. I have no notes for you." He says, "What you have done is uniquely you." And that's your obligation as an artist, is basically to create something. Like, it has to be new. If you're doing what someone else is doing, it's not art then, because you're just imitating. So you have to do something different and new. And so that felt like it gave me the license to go a little bit, you know, out of my comfort zone. I was like, okay, if I'm doing it wrong, maybe I'm doing it right.
What are your next steps? Like, how do you start to approach your storytelling differently? Do you look back at the stuff you've done and try to make it more you?
What happened? So there are like 17 stories in the book, and I actually wrote 20 something, but many of them just didn't make the book. But what I noticed was I just kept on writing, and it took me at least 2.5 years. And when I finally got to the last story, I go back and look at the first one. I go, oh, my voice style, my style has changed. And now I have to go back and change the early ones to make it catch up. So that was, it was really just a process of self-discovery. And that's what was so fun about it, you know?
On a practical level, how are you as a rewriter?
You know, I did rely heavily on all the knowledge that I gained as a TV writer. I just applied it towards a different medium. And it's not that different, but it is like TV, TV and film, you know how it is. It's like it's 99% dialogue. That's your tool. But when you're writing a book, you get to rely on internal monologue and narration or whatever but other tools, and there's not a lot of dialogue in the book, but it's still storytelling. And so I would break these stories very similarly to the way I broke, you know, I break a TV, an episode of television. And so it feels very visual. It doesn't feel like, I don't think it feels like, you know, heavy or like a novel. It really feels like here's an episode of, almost like an episode of in literature, in writing, you know.
Were there challenges specific to the medium? Like, I remember when my writing partner and I first started writing prose, he was like, oh my God, I have to say what the sky looks like.
But you write prose with your writing partner?
We have done some, yeah.
Like what, like short stories or something?
We wrote some middle grade novels.
Oh, really?
For Star Wars.
Interesting. Which, okay.
Like, it came out of, you know, like other stuff we were doing. The editor approached us, but it was the first prose that either of us had written to be published. And it was like, for sure, a learning curve. Once you found your voice, once you sort of were in it, writing these stories after the first year of it, were there challenges specific to prose that, you know, was stuff you had to figure out?
There was something that I was very insecure about, which was I didn't want people to read my book and say, oh, it's written by a sitcom writer. I didn't want it to feel like a sitcom. I didn't, you know, and I've read other books by other sitcom writers who've done something kind of similar. And my note for them, my problem with it, with some of it, was that it felt like they took the note. It felt like they'd grown so accustomed to getting the network note that they anticipated the network note and put it in the book. And so I was so insecure about, I was like, I don't want anyone to think I'm a sitcom. Like, so much so I didn't even want to put it on the back cover. Like, I didn't want, but you have to, but I didn't want to, you know. I wanted it to stand on its own merit, but you know, there are marketing reasons that you have to, but that's, so that was the biggest obstacle that I had to overcome, was like, how do I just keep digging deeper? How do I make it really feel true and authentic and not like feel like a TV show?
But it's funny too. I mean, like, you've worked on sort of standard sitcoms, although you've worked on a lot of like really smart sitcoms. You've also worked on, like, I think the last time we talked was when you guys were running Marin, and like, that was not a standard sitcom in a lot of ways. Like, it got deep and it got dark. So like, that shouldn't have been a muscle, I would imagine, that was difficult for you to work on. in this medium.
It's funny you say Marin, because that Marin, writing Marin and writing that show is what gave me the courage to actually write this, because I definitely, you know, Mark was extremely brave. When we were in the writer's room, he would be like, you know, he'd say, you know, he'd tell a story from his life. And I'm like, are you really want to do that on camera? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh my God. And so I thought, I was so inspired by that. And also Mark was very, like, he didn't want any of it to feel TV. He felt like if any time we even ventured towards something, he'd like, what is this, the joke parade jamming? Like, he would, he'd like call us out on it. And so, which is a good habit to break. And then also the notes from the studio were always very, I thought, helpful. They would say, the notes in the early days were like, this feels a little TV to us. Can you make it messy? And I remember my partner talking, we were talking like, that's easy. Making it neat is hard. Making it messy is easy. I was like, we're sure we can make it messy.
So now you're, you know, getting into these stories about your life. Like, you want these to be messy. How messy was comfortable for you?
Like, you know, when you're being uncomfortable, like I say, what's the difference between sharing and oversharing? Like, you know, sharing is when you make yourself comfortable or uncomfortable, and oversharing is when you make your reader or your audience uncomfortable. And so I felt like, well, how can I, like, what? I was worried about being judged as a writer when I put this book, like the last thing, like a sitcom or any writer, like I was more worried about people reading my book and then like judging me. Oh, this guy, Michael Jammin, thinks he can write, and obviously he can't. I was more worried about that than embarrassing myself or being vulnerable in the book. Like, that was I don't give a shit about that. I want to make sure that people get a good read.
Listen, we don't need to go full into therapy, but like, is the insecurity about, you know, being seen as a certain kind of writer or a writer at all, like, is this just part and parcel to the job? Is it a personality type who does this, or is this how you've always been?
You know, yeah. I mean, there's always imposter syndrome. You're always like, is this good? And am I good enough? And I work. when are you going to get over this? But it was a new medium for me, for sure. And also it's more vulnerable. Like, you know, I can always hide. If the show stinks, I can hide behind the actor, the director, the studio. They fucked it up, not me. But this is this is all on me here. So if you don't like it, it's me.
Yeah, it is. It's a direct representation of yourself. And yeah, that can be scary. You should really be proud of it. And I think you are.
I you know what? So we tour with this as a show, and we perform, and I perform it. And so even last night we're rehearsing, and I'm like, I don't know, is this story any good? You know, the story's already been published, but I'm just, and then funny thing is, this morning I got a note from a guy who just, you know, whatever, as if, you know, a reader, he sent me a piece of fan mail. He goes, and the note, he said the story that he loved the most was the one that we're rehearsing. I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should stop worrying about it then. Cause, you know, it was like a sign, you know.
Am I remembering correctly that you have in television worked with a writing partner?
Yeah, my partner is Sievert Clarum.
Okay, that's right. So is this the first thing you've written on your own?
I wrote a play on my own during the 2008 writer's strike. This was, yeah, but and that was seen by, you know, 100 people or whatever. But this is the first major thing I've done on my own, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that also. Like, how do you guys usually work together? And then what did you have to change about your own process?
Yeah. I mean, we do everything together, every, you know, movie, pilot, whatever, TV show. And so the way we usually work is it's literally the two of us in the room at the same time. We're breaking the story. We outline the story, as we're writing. It's one computer, you know, one keyboard with, you know, two monitors. So every line we both do together. This was a little intimidating to do it on my own. I felt like, especially in the beginning, like, am I doing it right? Is like, you know, I felt like a racehorse. When you're a racehorse, they travel, they run around in a circle, and the jockey's on their back hitting them to run faster. And that's the studio. The studio is always do it this way. And then finally, I'm a racehorse without a, you know, those racehorses can probably run faster without a 100-pound asshole hitting them, you know. And that's what I felt like. Well, all right, now I got the assholes off my back. Am I doing it right? And I really felt in the beginning, it was like, this felt so weird not to have someone telling me, giving me input or notes. But once I embraced it, and once I felt more confident in my writing, then it was like, I'm off, I'm gone, you know? And I started doing some weird shit in the book that I probably would never had the courage to do, which was kind of fun, you know?
Once you sort of found that voice and felt comfortable, was there something that helped you take those risks? Like, did you have early readers, or was it all internal?
There's only one person who read any of it, and that was my wife, Cynthia. And when I met her, she was an actress, so she understands, you know, what story is. And she would, you know, she would read. I wouldn't ask for notes. I'd say, do you like it or not? I gave her one draft of a story, which I go, do you like it? And she goes, I don't like it. This is terrible. But I didn't ask her how to fix it. I was like, all right, I will throw it out and start over, you know?
And honestly, like, I find those just thumbs up, thumbs down early reactions to be so helpful. Like, am I on the right track? Have I wasted my time? Like, you just want that emotional response.
You want to know, does your reader, do they want to turn the page or not? That's it. Did you want to turn the page?
So I want to go back to asking about working with a partner. So as you made your way through the book, like, and found your voice, did you also find his voice? Like, did you start to recognize what each of you brings to the party?
There were times where I would think, okay, what would Sievert think about this transition or this story moment? But I kind of chased that away because I really wanted it to feel authentic and a little bit messy. And I wanted it to feel, you know, it's funny, like when we work together, you know, I think he's very critical of, like, this moment has to be this. And then if we watch someone else's show or read someone else's script or whatever, he'll be more forgiving of certain moments. It's only when we're doing it that he, and so I thought, well, you know, he'll be forgiving of this.
That's great. It's funny. I mean, like, it sounds like such a, not just a positive process for you, but also something that you sort of had to do.
Yeah. I want to do it again. Yeah.
So now you're out touring with it and performing these stories, which is a whole other thing. Where did this decision come from?
Yeah, I don't know. It was really because, like, well, that's what David Sedaris does. Like, to me, it seemed like so much fun. I've been to a bunch of his shows. Like, that seems fun. Like, why does he, the only one who gets to have the fun? So if I could do what he does on, like, a tenth of the scale that he does, I'm happy. I consider myself successful, or even a 20th of the scale, like not even come close. But then, you know, so performing, like, I did stand up in college. I did a little bit of acting, but I'm not a performer. So I don't want to be an actor, but I did want to performing. My work felt obviously very authentic. It's like, well, I'm the only one really who can do it because it's me. So it's been interesting to do that. It's been, again, that's also swimming in water that's too deep, because I'm not a performer. Like, you know, it's, I had to learn how to do all this.
When you were writing it, you weren't thinking about reading these out loud. Is there a translation that has to happen? How are you finding that they play read aloud?
You know, a lot of it is like, some of them are like a table read. So I know, I've been to enough table reads to know, okay, this will get a laugh. But hearing it out loud, even if I'm reading it to myself, is very helpful. You know, cause I would go, oh, I'm this moment's not landing. That's like a big, or so, I tend to write fast. So I'll go back and I'll say, okay, this is one line here. This should be a paragraph, you know? And so hearing it out loud really helps. And then, you know, it's interesting when you perform for an audience, and it's small audiences, but with comedy, you get the feedback. You get, okay, the laugh. And if you hear the laugh, you're doing it right. But some of the stories get very dramatic. And so where's the feedback? So the feedback is in the silence. If you hear someone shifting in their chair or coughing, you fucked up. Like, you shouldn't, they should be so riveted that you could hear a pin drop. And so you have to look for both, two different things, laughter, you have to listen, and then also listen for silence.
This is ongoing, right? You're taking this out for sort of the next few months. Okay. So folks can find you at your website, right?
At michaeljammin.com/upcoming. You can sign up to be notified.
Great. That's really fun. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about what else you've been doing while working on this book, because surely you did not put everything on hold to work on this book, though we did have a pandemic and a strike.
Well, the last show we did was called Tacoma FD, and that was four seasons, and then it just got canceled. Pretty much everything on the network got canceled. You know, there's a lot of consolidation. So that was that. And then, you know, in between some pilots that sell but don't get made.
Where did Tacoma come from? When did you guys start on that?
Well, that's the weird thing is, so we heard through our manager that these two guys, the guys from Broken Lizard, which is a, you know, comedy troupe, they had a show that they put in development, and it was about the rainiest, there's a fire station in the rainiest, you know, part of the country. So there's no fires to put out. So it's just people bullshitting in the, you know, firehouse. And we had come up with that idea a couple, like maybe two seasons earlier, and it didn't sell. And so we had the meeting with them. And my partner was like, listen, we got a stack of ideas. They're yours. We, you know, we're not going to use them. They're yours if you want them. And they just hired us as co-execs instead.
How was the opportunity? Like, you didn't know those guys, right? You hadn't worked with them before.
Yeah. They're great guys. They're so much fun. They're very sweet. And, you know, we have another project with them on the side. And that's one of those things, like, once you find people, they were the stars, but also the showrunners. And so when you find people like that, you're like, I just want to work with these guys. They're just fun.
So tell me about, let's talk process for a sec, and, you know, juggling multiple projects over these past few years. What does that look like? I mean, left to your own devices, what does a sort of typical writing day look like for you?
Well, for me, I'm more creative in the morning. So if I can get a couple hours or a few hours in the morning, and then in the afternoon do all the bullshit that I don't really want to do, that's perfect for me.
And what time does morning start for you?
Probably around, well, I get up early. So I work out. I'd love to start writing before 9 and then stop it around lunch and then be done for the day. I'm not a hard worker.
Listen, you get the pages done. No one cares. If you are working from home, if you're not going into the office, again, like, what does that look like? Do you have to separate yourself from your life? Do you put music on, no music? How does it work for you?
Well, when I'm with my partner, I'm writing a show, a TV show, then we'll work from like 10 till 3 or whatever. We try, you know, there's more work to get done, but there's also two of us. So I can't listen to music when I'm writing. It sounds like a great idea, but my problem is that it's hard to concentrate. And it's also, if you're writing a scene, especially like an emotional scene, like this is more from like the book, like I would feel like, is it the music that's making me sad, or is it my words? You know? So you don't want the music, because you don't get to use the music.
And so you're trying to wrap up by noon, then you're doing all of the like admin and email that comes with being a full-time writer. Speaking of admin and email, a lot of folks ask about, especially lately, are asking about their relationship with reps. How long have you guys been with your agents, managers, whoever, and what's the relationship like?
We've been with UTA, I don't know, probably 20 something years, or well over 20, maybe 25 years. But in that time, we've had multiple agents. And what happens is your agent gets more successful, they get bigger, bigger, and then they outgrow you and they don't have the time for you. And so over the years, what we've done is asked to get kicked many times. Can you kick us down to someone who's new? That's what we want. Who's fresh, who wants to work hard.
I think that's great. So, but there is a learning curve with a new agent, even if they're at the same agency, even if you're working all the time. So let's talk about that for a second, because I think that's some advice that folks would love to hear. How do you work with new representation?
You've interviewed so many writers that I'm more curious to hear what you're hearing from people, you know?
I think the big thing, and I think you can probably speak to this, is to remember that they work for you.
I forgot that. Okay, go on.
I think we all forget it, especially early on. Like we feel so lucky to have anyone, but I think like we sort of have to define our careers and tell these folks what we want and how we can work together to do that.
I find, you know, we still have to do most of the work regardless of who the agent is. And, you know, Can you make a phone call? Can you set up a meeting or whatever? But if, you know, I think so many people think you're agent. This is how I feel, that you're agent. You know, new writers feel like, I need an agent. This agent, if I have an agent, they'll make my career. I was like, uh-uh. You got to make your career even when you have an agent. So if you're waiting for an agent to sign you so that you can begin your career, you don't understand how Hollywood works. Yeah. There's a lot you can do without an agent, in other words.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a lot you can do starting out, and then there's a whole lot you can do once you're established too. I think it's such a weird, you get like a good year out of an agent.
Yeah. You know, when I told my agent I was writing my book, they're like, oh, congratulations. I mean, it wasn't like there wasn't, they were, no one wanted to help. It was like, good for you.
Was UTA helpful at all in finding a publisher for you or an editor?
I had my UTA, I asked UTA like if we had a book agent. Yeah, we got one in New York. Oh, can I have a meeting? Sure. Like, they have to do that. So I sent this guy in New York. I contacted him and I said, hey, this is what I'm working on. And I have, you know, can I, do you think, can you help with this? He goes, well, send me some sample stories. So I sent him, I don't know, a handful of stories. And then I didn't hear back from him for months, maybe a half a year or whatever. But that didn't stop me. I just kept on writing. I kept on writing. And then finally, when he finally read it, he's like, hey, this is great. Can you send me the rest? I'm like, dude, I'm almost done. Hang on. Let me hit return and I'll send you the rest. And so that was, but again, it wasn't really about, there's only so much, it's really only so much they really want to do. It's really on you to, like, agents, there's a reason why agents take 10% of the money. It's because that's the amount of work they want to do, 10%, you know? And so you have to write it and you have to, you know, you really have to market yourself. And I think any agent or manager, what they're looking for in a new client is someone who is like just on the verge of like, if they take on one new client a year or two, they're not taking on a lot. They have clients they already have. And so if they're taking on someone, it's someone who's going to be on the cusp so that the agent can do the least amount of work and make the most amount of money. And that's how all of us would be if we had that job.
But there, you know? It's alarming to me. Like, what was the plan for you? You know, you were writing this stuff. You did want to, at a certain point, you're like, I want to get this published.
No, I've no, and not only that, I'm a no one. I was hoping that, well, I'm Michael Jammin, I'm a TV writer. Like, yeah, so what? You are literally no one in public. No one's ever heard of you. Why is anyone going to go to the bookstore and take your book off the shelf? Good question.
Yeah. So if this UTA agent was like, either I don't get it, or never got back to you, which is as realistic an outcome.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the plan for you?
The plan is I'm doing it. Regardless, I'm doing it. You know, what I found in this, especially in this space, personal essays, it's not like writing thriller, romance, or YA, or whatever, these words, cozy mystery. It's not like that. It's to be, you know, in the personal essay space, who are you? Like, who are you to be heard? Like, why? Like, who's Michael Jammin? No one. No one. And so what I learned was platform drives acquisition in this space of personal essays. I said, well, what does that mean? It means you need to have a social media following. Why? Well, who are you going to sell it to? But isn't that the publisher's job? No, it's your job now. It's your job. Well, what does the publisher do? Well, publisher will get you in Barnes and Noble, basically. But no one goes to Barnes and Noble. And by the way, they won't get you in Barnes and Noble because Barnes and Noble is really, they've really limited their selection. They're very, you know, it's more like only certain, like the big players will go to, you know, the big authors get there, not so much the little guy. So what exactly does this publisher do? And then the more I heard it, the worse, like just the worse the whole thing got, to be honest.
Presumably you came out of your, you know, the insecurity or, you know, whatever it was that you were saying, I'm nobody, to have an answer for that. So you have an audience here. They're listening. Why should they listen to your story?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Why? Yeah, I don't know. What I feel like. So the stories, it's really not about me. It sounds so, like when you say personal essays or even memoir, sounds even worse. It's like I'm writing my memoir. It just sounds so it sounds such bullshitty. Like, who wants to hear your memoir? And so none of the, even though the details are all mine, I really feel like the stories are all of ours. These are stories about love and regret and shame. And so when I'm writing these stories, it's not my diary. It's not how, it's not look how important I am. It's look how human I am. And all, like wars and all, like the weaknesses are, that's the interesting stuff. It's not look how cool I am. It's not look at my Hollywood life as a writer. Who cares? It's look, it's just like, look how human I am. And so all of us have those, but like every single person on the planet has stories like this. So what's the difference? Well, as a writer, I know how to tell them. That's it. You know, but you have every, you know, not you, everyone has stories. I just know how to tell them.
People should check out the book. They can find it in Barnes & Noble, probably.
You find barnesandnoble.com. That's where they can get it. And Amazon. And I'm...
Yeah, yeah. Find it on Amazon. Also, go to michaeljammin.com to get a paper orchestra and to come see you read. I think that would be really fun. We'll end, as we always do, by asking what you're watching on television these days. What's getting you excited or inspired?
Well, I've been watching a lot of movies that, like, so Perfect Days, I thought was beautiful. I'm really interested in these small character pieces, which is kind of what I'm writing. So that's, I love that. And then I went back just a couple of days ago and I'm rewatching, Fleabag from, you know, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, which is what I find so, which is so inspiring. Cause you know, she started as a playwright. So it was just a play that she staged. And when you watch it, you go, it feels like a play. It feels very talky. It feels very small, which I love. I love the smallness of these stories. But I remember also in season two, and I haven't rewatched season two yet, but I'm getting there, is she's really good at writing monologues, which I feel are so hard to write because it's not, monologues are not natural dialogue. And like, no one gives a giant speech like in real life. And so I try to write real, but the monologues are so artful. And I'm like, how is she doing this? So I'm watching that just to study her because I'm really interested to maybe learn something about monologue writing because she's so good at it.
That's cool. That's a really, that's a great idea. And I think it's also a good lesson for folks is like to just sort of pick out one thing that whatever this writer is really good at and study how they do it. Like I love zeroing in on that one aspect of the story. That's fun. And also what a great rewatch.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's so great. Yeah. She's terrific.
Michael, thanks so much for chatting today.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me on.